Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. The complicated cleanup from Hurricanes Maria and Harvey continues. Millions are without power or fresh water, especially in the U.S. Commonwealth of Puerto Rico and in the United States Virgin Islands.
One of the assertions we often hear in recent years when a powerful hurricane strikes is that while climate change likely impacts the frequency and severity of major storms, we can't connect any particular storm to the phenomenon of global warming. George Stone is a former natural sciences instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College and a Lake Effect contributor, and Stone says that assertion is wrong.
Well, first of all, climate forms the context for all weather. And the distinguished climate scientist Michael Mann from Penn State has emphasized and explained this over and over and over again. People say, oh, you can't connect any individual weather event with the climate. Of course you can, because climate is the context in which the weather events develop. Hurricanes, tropical storms in general, we call them hurricanes in the Atlantic and the Eastern Pacific. We call them typhoons in the Western Pacific and cyclones in the Indian Ocean. They're all tropical storms that form over warm water at the end of the summer. Why the end of the summer? And September is the peak month for hurricanes in the Atlantic. Because the ocean surface temperatures are the warmest. They've been under the sun ever since the equinox in March. What's different now is that the ocean surface temperatures are higher than they would have been normally because of global warming. The Gulf of Mexico surface temperatures up there in the range of 88, 89, 90 degrees surface temperature of the Gulf of Mexico water. Last year, we saw a couple of record-breaking torrential rainstorms along the Gulf Coast, first in the Houston area and then later on in Louisiana. And then the hurricane that went up the East Coast had record-breaking amounts of rainfall in North Carolina, basically flooded out the whole state. Well, where does all that water come from? Why is it record-breaking? Because there's more water vapor in the atmosphere now than there used to be. Approximately 6% more water vapor in the atmosphere than there was about 40 years ago. Well, that's huge, because it's the water vapor that condenses to form the rain. More water vapor, more rain. It's also the condensation of the water vapor that provides the latent heat, the energy source for the storms. So by having higher temperatures in the SST, the sea surface temperature, we not only are evaporating more water into the atmosphere for greater precipitation events, but we're also providing more energy for storms. And these two recent hurricanes formed in that environment. They were both record-breaking in terms of the low pressure. It got all the way down to 909 millibars, and of course the rainfall amounts up to 50 inches from Hurricane Harvey. Yes, this is a taste of a forecast, a foreview of what the weather is going to be like in the future because of global warming.
Let me jump in. Would you anticipate then that aside from the strength of hurricanes, given the temperature, the surface temperature of water, is hurricane season likely to go longer now as well?
That's a good question. I think so. I think the season we can anticipate will be extended. The other element, of course, in a hurricane that usually does the most damage, and that was certainly true of Hurricane Sandy a couple of years ago, is the sea surge.
Right.
Sea level is rising. And so when we get hurricanes, tropical storms with strong winds, as well as the sea surge, which is the bulge of water, kind of like when you blow into your soup bowl to cool it down, you produce a little trough and a bulge on the far side. That's basically what hurricane winds do. And the sea surge is much, much more damaging because the sea level's higher and the waves are higher due to stronger winds. And the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, is extremely concerned about these effects because the largest naval base in the world is at Norfolk, Virginia, and they are already suffering from the higher sea level and the higher tides and the higher waves and winds. So these are very serious problems. A hurricane, a tropical storm, has multiple weapons, one might say: wind, precipitation, and storm surge.
I want to ask you a little bit about the language with which we discuss these things, because not long after the worst of the hurricanes went through, or the worst of the hurricanes to this point, there was also an earthquake that struck near Mexico City. And, you know, we talk about both of these things as natural disasters, but I gather You think there ought to be a distinction between something like an earthquake striking in a place like Mexico City and the hurricanes that struck in the Caribbean and the Atlantic this year?
Sure. I think that's an excellent question, Mitch. I think it's very important to distinguish between what are clearly natural disasters due to natural processes like convection within the earth, which moves masses of rock or plates around and produces earthquakes. And we have no control over that. Shallow earthquakes is a different story. For instance, the number of earthquakes in the state of Oklahoma has increased 1,000-fold, three orders of magnitude in recent years due to the injection of fluids connected with fracking. But that's different. Generally speaking, these major earthquakes along plate boundaries are due to natural processes and are rightly called natural disasters. Now, the recent hurricanes, they are influenced by the effects of global warming. So to be accurate, we should call them natural disasters exacerbated by human influence, by anthropogenic global warming, because they certainly have been. The higher sea surface temperatures have caused stronger and perhaps more frequent hurricanes.
Let me ask you one other language question. Is there an appreciable difference when we talk about forecasting the climate versus forecasting the weather? You know, that is looking a year or 2 years or 5 years or 25 years in advance versus a weather forecast for, you know, the next 3 days?
Well, of course, climate forecasting is long term. That's the principal difference. These recent hurricanes make us realize just how important it is to have accurate information, accurate data, and a wealth of it, and accurate forecasts on which to base recommendations of evacuation and preparations for a severe storm. We depend on that, and it saved, I would say, not only billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, and saved countless lives, the fact that we were able to order evacuations from the places that are going to be most severely affected by the hurricane. So the forecasting skill is very important. We take it seriously. The great puzzlement to me is why people will take those predictions seriously based on scientific measurements and theory. And they'll take the predictions of the solar eclipse right down to the second and the mile on where to see this solar eclipse. They'll accept that, those predictions, but they do not accept the predictions of the climate scientists. This is extremely important. In the long range, the climate change is going to have trillions, hundreds of trillions, I'm not exaggerating, of dollars worth of damage. And it's already the coastal areas of the earth inhabited by hundreds of millions of people are being affected already. We accept the science for solar eclipse. We accept the science of predicting tropical storms. But we are ignoring the far more consequential predictions of global climate change. And they're just verifications of the data trends. They're not really any kind of wild predictions. These are prognostications. I remember Paul Joseph, who for a long time was the chief meteorologist at Channel 4. He used to take my weather class on a tour out at Channel 4, and he would say, you know what the accuracy is of weather forecasts? Well, it's about 92% the first 24 hours, drops to about 80% for the second 24, 2 days, down to 70% for 3 days, 60% for 4 days, and by the time you get 5 days out, it's about 50%, which is like tossing a coin. So climate is a much, much longer period, but the trends are clear. The trends are clear. The Earth's climate is warming up. The Earth has a positive heat balance. It's absorbing more radiation from the sun than it's radiating back into space because of the greenhouse gases are absorbing the heat. And it's just a fact. It's the reality of the Earth's climate system today. And for us to be ignoring it, I want to quote an engineer. Engineers tend to be rather conservative politically. This is Mark Edwards from VPI, Virginia Polytechnic Institute, on the situation at Flint, Michigan, 2 years ago. Quote, it was the injustice of it all, and the very agencies that are paid to protect these residents from lead and water knew or should have known after June 2015 at the very, very latest that federal law was not being followed in Flint and that these children and residents were not being protected. And the extent to which they went to cover this up, exposes a new level of arrogance and uncaring that I have never encountered. That's engineer Mark Edwards. Apply that same reasoning to the climate change crisis. More scientists need to come forward and talk about this.
I want to bring in someone who has actually spoken with Mark Edwards. WWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz is also with us in the studio. Susan?
So, George, where do you take that message? I mean, we have, I think, in general, a highly informed audience, people who listen or tune in to us in different ways. I think a lot of people get it. Where do you take that urgency? Do we need a greater groundswell at the community level, calling on our officials to act, or what? How do we attack this?
Yes, we certainly need more action. I'm chairing a session at the Geological Society of America's annual meeting this year in Seattle. The title of the session is Planetary Climate Disruption Demands Urgent Global Policy Action. And we have one of our lead speakers is Michael Mann. Another one is Lonnie Thompson from Ohio State, who's probably the world's leading expert on mountain glaciers. Ben Horton from Rutgers is going to talk about sea level rise. What we're saying in this session is that scientists of all kinds, especially earth scientists or scientists related to the study of the earth, are not fully meeting their responsibility. Every level, we have representative government, city, county, state, and federal also. We need to take this to every level. We need to make more noise. We need to make more noise.
George, I thank you for making noise with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Always a pleasure, Mitch. If it gets too quiet around here, call me up.
George Stone is a writer and former natural sciences instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College, and he is an occasional Lake Effect contributor.